And would you please open your Bibles to the book of Judges and the 11th chapter. Judges chapter 11, and the title of the sermon this morning is Men of Strength. This being Father's Day, as has already been observed, and many of you are here to be with your fathers, and we're certainly happy for that. But it's a good day to reflect upon fathers and upon the blessings that perhaps that you have had in the father that you have, or the obligation that you have to be a father as you should be. There are some in our midst who are new fathers, some who are expecting soon to be fathers, and some who anticipate one day that they would be a father. So it's a subject that is certainly well worth our attention. And I want to talk to you about a dad of distinction today. He's a man that perhaps you have not known before in your study of the Scriptures, or maybe one that that you don't know much about. But we'll be reading about him in the 11th chapter of Judges. But before we read from the text, I'd like to say to you something that I feel confident that many of you would agree with, and that is that the great need of today is for men, for real men, men of character, men of integrity, men that will take a stand. I would say to you that our nation has some trouble because our nation's homes are in trouble. And in many, many instances, our homes are in trouble because men in those homes are not often what they should be. A man was asked one time, "Are you a man or a mouse?" And he said, "I must be a man because my wife is afraid of a mouse." And I don't want to talk to you today about how to make your wife afraid of you. To be quite honest with you, there are tragically many, many homes where the wife is afraid of her husband, and for good reason. But that's not being a man. That's not a man of integrity. That's not being the kind of man that God intends for men to be in the homes where they're husbands and they are fathers. We're going to talk today about a man of strength. And I don't want you to leave here with the impression that that means then that I have to be the kind of man that my wife and my children fear. We're going to talk about Jephthah. As I said, a man who you may not have ever heard of before, but he's a great man. And I will admit to you that the Bible doesn't say a great deal about him, but it does tell us enough to know that he was a man of faith. For instance, in the book of Hebrews in the 11th chapter and in the 32nd verse, when the Hebrew writer is speaking about men and women of great faith from days gone by, he says, "And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets." He says, "I'm just," as he writes this chapter, this listing of and this remembrance of men and women of faith, he said, what could I say about these individuals that the Hebrews would have been certainly well familiar with? People like Gideon and Barak and Samson and David and Samuel. He says, "I just don't have the time to tell any more about that." I know some folks say, "Boy, I wish my preacher was that way." "I just don't have the time to tell you more about these." But right in the midst of that list of great individuals of faith, there we see the name of this man, Jephthah. So we're going to be talking about a man who had very distinguishable marks of character. Let's begin in Judges chapter 11 and start with the reading of the first three verses. It says, now Jephthah the Gileadite was a valiant warrior, but he was the son of a harlot, and Gilead was the father of Jephthah. Gilead's wife bore him sons, and when his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out and said to him, you shall not have an inheritance in our father's house, for you are the son of another woman. So Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob. And worthless fellows gathered themselves about Jephthah, and they went out with him. Now I want to begin by telling you that we're told very swiftly that this was a man of bravery. This was a man of valor. He was a very valiant man. But we also see that he is a man who has a very difficult background. If anyone had a past that they could have used as an excuse for why things weren't going their way in life, it was this man, Jephthah. He was the son, the text tells us, of a harlot. His father had a wife, and with that wife, he had other sons. And those sons grew up and drove Jephthah away from them. So he's driven out from his family. He's an outcast from those with whom he should have been the closest. He's driven away. He falls into what I think we could rightly say is kind of a rough crowd. Some worthless sorts of fellows gather themselves to Jephthah. Now we might look at that and we might say, you know that fellow Jephthah. I can just imagine some folks saying this back then. You know that fellow Jephthah. You just can't expect much out of him. Don't expect too much from him. But after all, he's really not to blame. You know, very often people will take difficult circumstances and use them to excuse every failure for the rest of their lives. I want to tell you, the first mark that we need to realize about this, the character of this man, Jephthah, this man of strength, is that he had character in the face of difficulties. He had extreme difficulties in his background. You know, we live in a generation, I fear, of victims. No one is guilty. Someone else is always to blame. You're not sinful. You're sick. I don't know if you saw recent videos after the Lakers won the championship, and I have to confess to you, I'm not much of a basketball fan. But after they won the championship and the celebrants after the final game, go out into the streets and they overturn cars and they burn things and they break windows and on the disruption and the havoc went. Two things that were troubling to me as I watched that video. Number one was, there was no shame. These were folks, men mostly, by the way, almost exclusively men, young men, who knew they were being videotaped, who even had police officers in the immediate vicinity, and there was no shame whatsoever exhibited about what they were doing. And the second troubling thing was, there was no fear of punishment. Apparently no thought given whatsoever that anything is going to be done. And I may be making an incorrect assumption, but I will label it as my assumption, but I just suspect that if you had the opportunity to speak to some of those young men, they would probably have excused what they were doing on the basis of how bad things have been for them in their young lives. Things just not fair. We don't have the opportunities that others have. We don't have the benefits that others have. We've been denied of certain privileges in life. Some may be absolutely accurate statements of fact, but they are difficulties being faced by individuals and difficulties being used oftentimes as an excuse for wrong kinds of behavior. I don't know about your background, but if you've had a rough background, I like the way one person expressed it one time. A preacher said about rough backgrounds, difficult circumstances that one has grown up in. He says, think of it as the black velvet upon which the glittering diamond of God's grace can be displayed. Rough backgrounds, difficult circumstances are realities. But I want you to think about some of the people in the Bible who came out of difficult circumstances. I'll just mention one to you, but you can expand the list. Do you remember the story of Joseph? That young boy as a teenager, taken by his brothers, very much like Jephthah, and cast out of the home, taken by his own brothers, sold into slavery, taken off down into Egypt, there put into the service of a man named Potiphar, whose wife makes false accusations about advances that he supposedly made toward her when she was in fact the one making advances to him, which he rejected. But she made these false accusations. Her husband has him thrown into jail. He spends some period of time, undefined, but apparently a rather lengthy period of time involving years in jail, wrongly charged, wrongly put there, wrongly held. Here's a man, a young man, who had great difficulties in his background. But his abasement became the opportunity for God to advance him. And you recall the rest of the story of Joseph, how through the providential actions of God, he came to be the second in all of the kingdom of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. Joseph, for all practical purposes, rose to be the ruler over Egypt. So if you have difficult circumstances from which you have come in life, and maybe find yourself still in the midst of difficult circumstances, you think about Jephthah. Stop making excuses. Stop making alibis. Here was a man with a bad background, and he is listed in the hall of fame of the faithful servants of God. We can disentangle ourselves from our past. And that's one lesson that Jephthah teaches us. But it's going to require character in the face of difficulties. But I want you to read on with me in Judges, the 11th chapter. And I want you to take note with me in verses 4 through 11 of the confidence that Jephthah had in the face of danger. Verse 4 tells us that it came about after a while that the sons of Ammon fought against Israel. When the sons of Ammon fought against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to get Jephthah from the land of Tob. Now you just remember he's a valiant man. He's already shown himself to be a courageous warrior, but still driven out, driven away. But now here we find the people of Israel, and Gilead is a region in the land of Israel. They're in trouble. They have enemies who are attacking them. And what do the folks of Gilead do? Well, they find that valiant man, Jephthah. And verse 6 says that they said to Jephthah, come and be our chief that we may fight against the sons of Ammon. Then Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, did you not hate me and drive me from my father's house? So why have you come to me now when you are in trouble? The elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, for this reason we have now returned to you, that you may go with us and fight with the sons of Ammon and become head over all the inhabitants of Gilead. So Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, if you take me back to fight against the sons of Ammon and the Lord gives them up to me, will I become your head? The elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, the Lord is witness between us. Surely we will do as you have said. Then Jephthah went with the elders of Gilead, and the people made him head and chief over them. And Jephthah spoke all the words before the Lord at Mizpah. Now here's a man who somehow, out of this bleak background, had faith. And he was a man who continued to live with that faith. I know he was a man of faith. We've already read it in Hebrews 11 and verse 32. It says so. And we read of him in that verse mentioned with David and Samson and Barak. He was in good company, wasn't he? This was the nature, this was the character of this man, Jephthah. The people had cast him out, but now in troubled times they come back to him. Does that sound like us, maybe sometimes? We find ourselves in trouble. Jesus, we have kind of edged out of our lives. We might not have done that in so apparent and such an upfront way as these folks had cast Jephthah out of their lives. We just kind of elbow him out of ours. We don't want him to have quite as much a place and prominence. But then we find ourselves one day in trouble. And what do? Well, we come back to Him. We come back to the Lord and we begin to say, oh, help us now, Lord. I find it interesting, kind of an interesting comparison to make. Did you see what Jephthah asked these folks when they said, will you come and be head over us? Come and rule us? And he said, if I come back, will I be head over you? I think maybe the Lord has that in mind. Sometimes when we come back, we find ourselves in trouble and we say, oh, now we need you. I need you now, Lord. Will I be head over you? Will I be the commander now? Will I be the one that you follow, the one that you listen to? And then Jephthah, as he faced danger, did so in an interesting way. In verse 11, we're told that when they made him head and chief over them, then Jephthah spoke all his words before the Lord at Mizpah. I like the way this man went about facing danger. He went to God. He spoke before God. He didn't go into battle and then pray. He was a man who went first to the Lord. That's what a man of strength will do. He has character in the face of difficulties. He has confidence, not in himself, but confidence in God. He has confidence in the face of danger. And then, thirdly, he has commitment in the face of disappointments. I want you to drop down with me now in the reading to verse 29. And we're going to read a little extended passage here from verse 29 and following. Now what has happened when we get to verse 29 is Ammon has led the people out into battle against, or Jephthah has led the people out into battle against the people of Ammon, and he's won the victory and everything is great. And now Jephthah returns home. Verse 29 says, now the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah so that he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and then he passed through Mizpah of Gilead, and from Mizpah of Gilead he went on to the sons of Ammon. Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if you'll indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. Now get that in your minds. He's saying, now Lord, if you'll allow me to win this victory, when I go home, whatever comes out of my house first, I'm going to give that to you. I'll offer it in burnt offering. I suspect that Jephthah was remembering several times when he had returned home, and the first thing he would see coming out as he would come towards his house, the first thing he would see would be one of the sheep, one of the animals that he had, that he owned. And so he makes this vow to the Lord to give this offering. Well, Jephthah then, verse 32 says that he crossed over to the sons of Ammon to fight against them. The Lord gave them into his hand. He struck them with a great slaughter from Aroer to the entrance of Minnith, 20 cities, and as far as Abel-Karamim. So the sons of Ammon were subdued before the sons of Israel. He wins the victory. When Jephthah came to the house, to his house at Mizpah, behold, his daughter was coming out to meet him with tambourines and with dancing. Now she was his one and only child. Besides her, he had no son or daughter. Can you imagine that man's heart as he approached his house? And not some sheep, not some little calf, but his one and only daughter comes out of the house, dancing, celebrating her father's great victory. When he saw her, verse 35 says, he tore his clothes and said, "Alas, my daughter, you've brought me very low. And you are among those who troubled me. For I have given my word to the Lord and I cannot take it back." I want to tell you one verse that says volumes to us about the kind of father this man Jephthah was. Is verse 36. And it's not by what he says, but it's by what his daughter says. Listen to what she said. "My father, you have given your word to the Lord. Do to me as you have said, since the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the sons of Ammon." You want to talk about faith and great faith and devotion to God. It's in that unnamed daughter of Jephthah who says, "Whatever you have promised the Lord, Father, you must do. Whatever it involves, however it might affect me, you must do what the Lord says to do." Now, if you've never really read this story before and you don't know Jephthah very well, your mind may be running ahead here and think, okay, now what in the world is going to happen? Is he really going to burn her as a sacrifice? Well, let me tell you that I don't believe that is what happened. The law of Moses, the law of God that was given through Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 31 and several other places, absolutely forbade the Jews from offering human sacrifice. This man of faith, this man of strength, Jephthah, could not be a man of such sterling character as we see him described and be a man who would take his daughter and kill her and sacrifice her in a burnt offering. It was wholly out of character with being a man of righteousness, wholly out of character with the nature of God to be one who would accept human sacrifice. But yet, Jephthah understood he had made a vow. Now, remember what his vow was. His vow was that whatever comes out of my house first, I will give to you. It is the Lord's, whatever comes out first. He made the assumption that it would be an animal and that the means of giving that or keeping that vow to the Lord would be by giving a burnt sacrifice. That was the assumption he made. His vow was, whatever comes out of my house first, I give to the Lord. It is the Lord's. Now then, the reality is, it's not an animal that he would offer in sacrifice, but it's his own daughter. The vow must be kept. I'll give her to the Lord. It's not by the assumed way of sacrifice. But you read on and we see where in verse 37 she says to her father, "Let this thing be done for me. Let me alone 2 months that I may go to the mountains, weep because of my virginity and my companions." Then he said, "Go." So he sent her away for 2 months and she left with her companions and wept on the mountains because of her virginity. At the end of 2 months, she returned to her father, who did to her according to the vow which he had made. And she had no relations with a man. Thus it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went yearly to commemorate the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days in the year. Now I want to tell you, these verses indicate to us there is no sacrifice involved in the keeping of his vow. Because the text says that after she had spent some time alone, she mourns over her virginity, it says. In other words, she was never going to marry. She was never going to have children herself. And she mourns over that for a time. She adjusts to what must be done. Then she comes back to her father. And the text says she has no relations with men. That is, in the rest of her life, she remained a virgin. She was not put to death. She was not offered as a burnt sacrifice. Such would be sinful in the eyes of God. But she is given to God. She's given to the service of God. Most likely around the tabernacle, the forerunner to the temple. I'll tell you a parallel to this. If you read in the book of 1 Samuel, you read about the little boy Samuel. His mother couldn't bear children. She prayed to God that she might have a son. God gives her that blessing. She has a son. But she made a vow before she became pregnant. She said, if you'll give me a son, I will dedicate him to you. And when she had the son Samuel, she raised him to a point as a young boy where he could finally be taken. She kept her vow. She gave him in service to the priest, Eli, to the high priest. That's what Jephthah does with his daughter. Now, we don't know exactly where she went into this service. If it was to serving the priest in some way, serving at the tabernacle, we don't know where it was. But what we know is that it was a giving of her to the Lord and to the service of the Lord in a way that she never married. And she mourned over that. But then she submitted herself to what must be done, as did her father. Now, what I'm saying to you is this. Here we see commitment in the face of disappointment. He was disappointed. Do you think, remember his background. Such a hard upbringing, difficult things because of who his mother was and all. Driven away from the home. He came to have a home of his own one day. One daughter. Don't you know he had the hopes of grandchildren one day? But that was not to be. He faced disappointment. But he did not allow disappointments to cause him to break his commitment. His commitment was to God and to the keeping of God's service. In the book of Numbers, we read where the statement is made that you should keep the vow that you vow to the Lord. If you make a vow to the Lord, you keep it. If you make a commitment before God, you keep that commitment. That's what men of strength do. Now I want you to think with me for just a moment, briefly. I want you to think of men who confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and they are baptized into Christ, making a commitment to Him, to live for Him and to serve Him, and then in days to follow, they don't keep the commitment. I want you to think of men who stand before God and they vow to be faithful to their bride, and then in days to come, they break that commitment. I want you to think of men who make promises to their families and then routinely break those promises to their wives and to their children. I want you to think of men who become like Jephthah was, a leader among their people, politicians who place their hand on the Bible and take an oath of office, and then in days to come, they break that vow. There are many, many ways that we can become men of weakness rather than men of strength. But I'll tell you one thing that Jephthah teaches us, a valuable and a vital lesson about how to be men of strength. It is keep your word. When you make a commitment to God, keep your word. Doesn't matter how difficult circumstances get. It doesn't matter how disappointing circumstances may become. Keep your commitment. If you make a promise to your wife or to your children, to your co-workers, to your boss, keep your word. That's how to be a man of strength. That's the kind of man Jephthah was. And that's what gets Jephthah listed among the men and women of faith in the book of Hebrews. What kind of man are you being? What kind of man do you want to be? I'll tell you what God is described to us as. He is described as faithful. He is a God who is faithful. A lot of times we talk about our faith to God, but God shows faith to us in that He keeps His commitments. He keeps His word. He keeps His promises always and without fail. Would you make a commitment to God today? Would you make a vow, a promise? If you're not a Christian, would you? That's what becoming a Christian really is. It's making a vow to God, a commitment to Him. I'm going to live as your child now. And you can become a child of God today by giving your obedience, faithful obedience. A faith that Jesus is God's Son and a commitment to follow Him in all that He says and all that He requires. He calls on people who would become children of God to turn away from sins. Make that commitment today. Turning away from sins to confess Him as the Son of God. You make that commitment today by stating before this group that you believe Jesus to be God's Son. And He called upon men and women to be baptized, washing away their sins. And in that obedience to Him, you can become one of His children. Would you make that commitment? Would you make it today? And then would you live by it? We pray that you would as we stand and sing.